I've been in education most of my life. And it just breaks my heart to see students being taught what to think, not how to think. What I mean by that is deductive reasoning, common sense, figuring things out. They're taught to the test. I had a friend of mine who was he taught the same high school, and I was working on some other degree. I couldn't remember all the degrees. I couldn't decide which ology I liked best, so I've got degrees in geology, biology, psychology, you name it. But he let me interview some of his students after he had given the final exam. In fact, he said he was going to retire because it was the first time ever in 40 years that somebody had gotten 100% on his final. But I asked them, I went over different ones, but I remember this one kid, he got 100% on the test. And so I would read the question. I said, okay, here on question two, you had four choices, and you picked the right one. Why? He had no idea. He just knew it was the right answer. He was taught to the test. And that's the sad part is students don't know there's an alternative. The teachers don't know. That's why, if you look, the title of my presentation is Science and the Bible, What You're Not Being Told. I didn't accept Christ till 1 month after my 40th birthday. And I came kicking and screaming. I grew up in a Christian home. My mother and my grandmother were my brother, sister, dad, everybody. We grew up in the hills of Kentucky, Wofford, Kentucky. And I'll tell you what, if you've never heard a good Southern Baptist preacher from the hills of Kentucky, I was afraid not to be a Christian. That boy could get it preached. I thought fire was going to come out of his mouth, you know. But that was just the beginning. See, I thought because I was born in America, I had to go to church, and my grandmother had a motivator called a willow branch. And we prayed before meals. That makes you a Christian. I knew nothing about the relationship with Jesus. You ever hear that old cliche, you won't get to heaven on your mother's religion? Well, you won't get there on my science either. What you need is a relationship with the person who wrote the book. You have to put your own nose in there and ask the Holy Spirit to decipher it for you. See, we moved from Wofford, Kentucky in 1958 right straight to Newport Beach, California. Let me tell you about culture shock. And I can really relate. I was wearing those Oshkosh jeans before they were cool. My first day of school was miserable. I had to walk to school. Most of the kids were being dropped off by the chauffeurs and, the Rolls Royce. John Wayne lived four blocks from where we were. And I remember I'm walking down the sidewalk. I had my little brown bag with my bologna sandwich in it, and I shuffling. Some of you are old enough to remember the TV series The Beverly Hillbillies? Let me tell you, I could really relate. But again, if you'd asked me at that time if I was a Christian, I would have said yes for the very same reason. Born in America, prayed, that sort of thing. My first day of school was traumatic. Kids can be merciless, especially young kids in those days. And I learned a new word my first day of school, hick, and I was one. But fortunately, I was pretty good size for my age, and I liked sports and surfing, and things mellowed out. It was really cool, a great place to grow up in those days. But I remember my first day of high school was really strange because I took biology first period. All my friends were taking study hall or something, but I was a science nerd from the get-go. And like I said, I couldn't decide which ology I liked best. But I just knew I liked science. And I took first period biology for two reasons. This great scholar, scientist, biologist from Pepperdine University, but he was also the freshman football coach. I walk in and there he stood. This great athlete, great scholar, hello God. There he was. He kind of smiled, and that was in 1962. And he waits till everybody gets in. He's messing with some boxes. He waits till everybody gets in. I think there were like 30 kids in the class. And after we were all seated, he smiles, introduced himself, and he says, I need to ask a question before we get started. Okay. But this is where my life changed. He says, how many of you in this room are Christians? Oh, what? what does that have to do with your first day of high school biology, you know? I thought that was rather weird. But I looked around the room and four or five hands went up. I figured, well, I'm one of those, so I raised my hand. Then he kind of smiled and he says, I want to apologize to those of you who raised your hand and said you're a Christian, because by the time the semester's over, you won't be. That's how I started high school. Boom. Let me tell you about the flip-flopping, my stomach tight knots. Had my mother been lying to me, my grandmother, what is this, you know, Christian? And he immediately hands out our textbooks, and he starts telling us about Charles Darwin and how we evolved from this warm little pond of scum into more sophisticated, you know, all up from one flesh to another flesh, right on up into the chimps and the humans, and that the Bible couldn't be true. It's just, oh, man, I was devastated. Couldn't wait to get home. You know, like I said, I majored in obnoxiousness, so I had a real edge. I walked into the house, and at 14, it was cool because I was taller than my mom now, you know, and I, come here, Mom. Put my arm around her, and I said, Mom, I'm 14. I'm in high school. I know everything. You can take this Jesus stuff and put it over with Santa Claus and Easter Bunny. It's a myth. That was not a smart thing to say to a good Southern Baptist prayer warrior woman. Whoa, buddy, let me tell you, I knew I was in trouble because the color just drained out of her face. These little veins right here started to pulsate. And then the finger came out and went right on my nose. And she's pushing me across the room, and she couldn't even talk. She was so upset. She said, don't be none of that talk in this house, young man. And she reached out and grabbed a Bible. There were Bibles hanging from the ceiling in her pockets on the floor in the dress. She had Bibles everywhere. She was a Jesus freak. She actually put red marks and yellow marks in the Bible, you know. So she starts quoting scripture. I just smile and I start quoting Darwin. Now, my mother was a great prayer warrior lady, but she was not prepared to defend her faith to an obnoxious 14-year-old scientifically. So I had her in tears in a hurry. And I remember, like I said, the spirit just drained out of her. She's just, and she drops the little Bible she had in her hand and she shuffles over to the book stand where we had the family. You know, that big white one with the thick cover. And I never saw her lift it by herself before, you know. She picks it up. I'm thinking, what is she going to quote out of that one that's not in the little one? Nothing. She just ran over and belted me with it. Whoa, that is not funny. It was not funny at the time. Later, she said she hoped that some of those words would sink in. Because it was not funny, because my mother clobbered me with the Bible. It was not a love tap. She belted me. It surprised me. It shocked me. It made me mad. And I turned on her and I says, I will show you. So at 14, I made a vow that I was going to prove that science had the answers. And see, science became my God. I worshiped at the altar of science. My prayer this morning was, God, give me as much faith in your word as I had in man's word. Because that's exactly what it boils down to. Guys, we're talking about two faith-based religions here. Not science and creation or science and the Bible. We're talking about two faith-based religions. And you don't have a lot of choices. There's only two, God's word or man's word. Where are you going to put your faith? How big is your God? See, my God is really big. He's so big that he created everything. He spoke it into existence. Ex nihilo, out of nothing. See, and if you tell me that Genesis isn't true or it's poetic and you can't take Genesis literally, then don't get in my face with John 3:16, because who are you to tell me which parts are true and which aren't? See, it's either all true or none of it's true, in my opinion. See, that's my thick head. See, my mom pointed out real early what PhD stands for, piled high and deep. And she was a wise woman. Now, I'm involved currently in several major research projects. In fact, it's starting to wear me down. I just turned 70 in June, and my mind says I can still do it. My body says no. Climbing into craters and down the Grand Canyon on rafts and dinosaur digs and stuff. We need young Christian men and women that are willing to pick up the gauntlet and continue on. Because I'm getting too old and decrepit to be doing it. But let me tell you, we are winning. You wouldn't know it by the press, but we are making some absolutely phenomenal inroads. See, one of the things that was supposedly going to shut the Christians up, and in my opinion, in 1976, the National Science Academy adopted a resolution because they were afraid that the Christians were going to interfere with science because we were going to prove how ignorant they were, and they adopted this resolution. Try finding a copy of that. It says, scientists should be allowed to follow their research wherever the evidence leads without fear of retaliation. Because they were afraid the Christians would get all upset. Well, guess what's happened? Just the opposite. See, one of the things that's really cool, there's this four-letter word that strikes fear in the hearts of students everywhere. It's called math. And the math is devastating Darwinian evolution. You see, you can't ignore the laws of probability. You know, just getting here, you use the laws of probability. You know, and the math is overwhelming. And the fun thing about math is nobody can claim they invented it. They just discovered it. Everything is mathematical. You know, students can do more math than Einstein could even imagine in just a few minutes with this thing, this little computer. See, as technology got more and more advanced, the more it showed how absurd Darwinian uniformitarian evolution was. So the scientists started becoming panicked. And if you're evident, and by the way, in science, you know, we've got some words that are called law, hypothesis, and theory. Law means that you can test and confirm it. Evolution, you know, you can use empirical evidence. You can give your research to another science. They confirm it. We have something called the law of biogenesis. That is that life can only come from life. That's a law. Except, you see, as a secular humanist, anti-Christian, I believed in a miracle. That first miracle, that life came from non-life. No other miracles, you know, no, that, but because there's no other explanation for it. There is no explanation for how life can come from non-life. We can't do it. They've tried everything they know, and life begets life. But information, you know, there's one of my favorite scientists, and in fact, I had the pleasure of having lunch with him. His name is Dr. Werner Gitt. Dr. Gitt wrote a book a number of years ago that the scientific community would not allow the book to even be reviewed in the United States. The name of the book was called In the Beginning Was Information. But he talks about information. What is information? Where does information come from? But he makes this quote that no scientist in the world can refute, nor has. That's why they wouldn't review his book. They don't want you to know it exists. And the quote says, information does not originate by itself in matter. Okay? Information does not originate by itself in matter. Okay. Nobody disagrees with it. No scientist in the world disagrees with that statement. But here's where trouble begins. Because all you have to do is ask a simple question. If it doesn't originate by itself in matter, where does it come from? Whoops. Say, where did the information in this computer come from? Did I buy this little gray box and sit it down and all of a sudden it was full of information? No, it came from the creator of the computer. So where, and here's the case, that the scientific community states that the universe contains 10 to the 90th bits of information. Great, that's pretty exciting. Well, where did that information come from? How about the creator of the universe? See, that's the only place it could come from. That's why they don't want you to know about that. But that's just one little area. But see, thinking, growing up in that Christian environment, then going to high school and being told that it's a myth. In fact, I'll tell you something. Back in the Jesus, I grew up in Newport Beach. I used to go down, remember the Jesus people, and they had all those baptisms in Corona del Mar down there. And all that. My friends and I would get up on the bluff and throw water balloons at the Jesus freaks. I kept trying to hit the ball guy that was baptizing everybody. Yeah, Pastor Chuck Smith. Oh, let me tell you, I think God has a sense of humor because Chuck baptized me in that same cove. He married my wife and I worked for him for 3 years. Okay, Lord, you're getting my attention. But it was a rough, rough road until 1987, 1 month after my 40th birthday. Mount St. Helens erupted and blew up in my face. I was there in 1980. It darn near killed me. It killed 57 people, including a friend of mine, David Johnson. But we saw things happen that had we not been there, had we not seen it, we would have said took millions and millions of years. I saw a canyon carved 150 feet deep, a quarter mile across, and 15 miles long through solid bedrock in a matter of hours and days. I saw 600 feet of minute strata laid down in a 300-mile-an-hour blast. If we hadn't seen it, that's impossible. I saw coalification, fossilization, all of these things happening rapidly. But that was in 1980. It still took 7 years of in-my-face research before I finally crumbled and accepted Christ. See, my biology was already starting to crumble because every time I looked in a microscope, literally, I would have to walk away, catch my breath, and convince myself that what I was looking at wasn't designed. Don't you think I'd get a hint? The design is absolutely perfect. Mathematically, it was absolutely overwhelming. But that was a long, hard road. I'll tell you what, it is getting frightening out there. I have been disinvited from churches for the first time in my life. I was speaking in Tennessee at a church, and a gentleman came up afterwards, came out to the table, and he says, "Wow, that was cool. Can you come to our church?" Well, he was visiting his daughter in Tennessee. His church was in California. I said, "Hey, that's really cool, because I live out there." And so we made arrangements, but 2 weeks before I was to show up, I got a phone call from the senior pastor, which I pretty much need to talk to the senior pastor before I'm going to stand up in his pulpit. Well, he calls, and he says, "Hi," and he introduced himself. He says, "I'm looking through your material here," and he says, "Now, do I understand that you take Genesis literally?" And I said, "You bet." Well, it kind of went silent. He says, "You know, that's a little too controversial for us." How, I'm rarely speechless, but I was then. What do you say to that? See, if Genesis isn't literal, then what about the rest of the Bible? You can't just pick and choose which parts you want. So that's the scary thing that's going on out there. And I tell you, it's heartbreaking. But again, Genesis, where would we be without Genesis? You know, every single thing in our life is in Genesis. You know, when God said in the beginning he created, he meant it. He created ex nihilo out of nothing. But look at, and the age of the earth. Why is the age of the earth important? I have people saying, "Well, did you ever hear this question? Couldn't God have used evolution?" I get that all the time. There's no such thing as a dumb question, but that one gets real close. Because what is it God can't do? He can't lie. Well, let me tell you this. Could God use evolution? You bet. He's God. He can do whatever he wants. But the question is formed wrong. It should be, did God use evolution? If you ask it properly, now you can go to his word, and he answers it. Number one, we are created in what? His image. Not in the image of a protozoan. But here's the other thing. How do you explain, you know, theistic evolution? And by the way, that's where I was. I became a theistic evolutionist in 1987 when I accepted Christ. Because I kept trying to bring God down and put him in my box, make him fit my secular worldview. So I got to tell you, my PhD says evolutionary biology right on it. I chose the school because it didn't just say biology or life science. It said evolution because I was absolutely convinced. And so with a PhD in evolutionary biology, you know what that does? That makes me a professional evolutionist. I am an evolutionist. I believe in evolution. I know it works. See, I've evolved into the creationist I am today. Sneaky, huh? And I mean, that's true because I really did. I mean, I went through the steps. But the thing is, evolution is not a dirty word, folks. You know what evolution means? The very basic meaning of evolution is change. It's when we put macro and micro in front of it that we get into trouble. See, I know I can mess with the genes of a dog, and I can get Chihuahuas and I can get German Shepherds. They're both dogs. Well, at least one of them is, anyway. But I can't get a cat or a giraffe, you know? Just think about that. So there's no such thing as macroevolution, that one flesh changes into another flesh. I'm not done. Now, remember the first question I said? Did God use evolution? If you ask it right, we're created in His image. Well, the second part of that question is you can go again, and He answers it. Go to 1 Corinthians 15:39. It says, all flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of animals, another flesh of fish, and another of birds. End of discussion. So, could God use evolution? Yes. Did He? No, He says so. Because if God used theistic evolution, which where He started that first little cell, and then He let it evolve, and He helped it out over the millions of years, and so, then He's a liar. But here's the other problem. God said what He meant and meant what He said. He said 6 days, not 6,000 days or 6 million years. No, He said what He meant and meant what He said. And like I said, it's based on faith. And in Hebrews 11:6, God says, by faith we will know. By faith. Without faith, you can't please God. But He didn't say blind faith. He gave us the preponderance of the evidence. There's the problem. Who owns the secular educational system, the world. See, when I realized that my evidence could not stand up to comparison, what did we do? We outlawed comparison. Works pretty well, doesn't it? If you can't even compare it. So, oh, well, you can't bring creation into the classroom. That's metaphysics. We can only use empirical evidence. Guys, that's just baloney. There's a good scientific term for you. Baloney. Because it's two faith-based religions. In fact, let me show you. You know, Hosea, God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Well, let's look and see what has knowledge done. Look at this. In 150 years, 1750 to 1900, 150 years, knowledge doubled, folks. That is absolutely mind-boggling. Stunning. But then look what started to happen. In the next 50 years, it doubled. Then in 10 years, 8 years, to today, it's doubling about every 12 months. Guys, that is absolutely frightening. How much more can knowledge increase? And God says in Daniel that that was a sign of the end times. I want to show you this little clip talking about knowledge and what's happening to your students. There's something called the knowledge filter, where knowledge is being filtered out. Students and teachers don't even know some of this stuff. I have had teachers weep and cry and come to me and say, I didn't know this. I never heard this. They didn't even know. And the kids are discouraged from questioning. They're just taught to the test. See, if we were honest and would lay out all of the evidence, if we could, you know, if there's some miracle, we could lay out miles of tables and put all of the empirical evidence. And by the way, empirical just means it can be tested and confirmed. So there's a good question. How would you test and confirm spontaneous generation or the Big Bang? You know, you can't. But if we would just lay miles of tables, put all of the empirical evidence out there, and then if we would just step back and shut up and let you use the brains God has given you and the students, the evidence would speak for itself. And since that's the truth, that's why we don't allow it. It's not allowed. I'm going to show you in this little clip, you're going to see bags. These canvas bags have a yellow tag, and it's lead sealed, so you can't open it. You can't mess with it. You know, and on the tag, you know what it says? Anomaly. You know what that means? It doesn't fit. I have pictures of warehouses full, floor to ceiling, front to back, of these bags. And you know what's in those bags? Hundreds of thousands of fossils. Anomalies. See, that way I could stand up in front of my students and I could honestly tell them that according to the available evidence, see how sneaky that is? I don't tell them about the non-available evidence. The available evidence that supports Darwinian evolution, you can put in a shoebox. But it takes warehouses to house the stuff that goes against evolution. That is just wrong. So watch this little clip.
Basically, what you find is something we call a knowledge filter. This is a fundamental feature of science. It's also a fundamental feature of human nature. People tend to filter out things that don't fit, that don't make sense in terms of their paradigm or their way of thinking. So in science, you find that evidence that doesn't fit the accepted paradigm tends to be eliminated. It's not taught, it's not discussed, and people who are educated in scientific teachings generally don't even learn about
it. You see how wrong that is? That's just plain wrong. And like I said, I don't have time to get into all the meaty stuff, but guys, there is so much, we are making so much difference in inroads. And like I said, though, we need young people. I've been down the Grand Canyon so many times, the mountain goats know me by name. But I worked on the Nautiloid Research Project. I worked on the Hansen dinosaur dig. I found the only Pachycephalosaurus skull ever found up there. And my mom said that was a great find for me because Pachy means thick, cephala means head. Thick-headed dinosaur for a thick-headed scientist. My mom was a wise lady. But Jesus tells us in Matthew 24:4, he says, take heed that no man deceive you. Well, we also need to back that up with Acts 17:11. Check it yourself. You need to put your own nose in God's word and ask him. And that's why we hope. But take a look at this. This was my hero, Ernst Mayr. Look what his PhD is, evolutionary biology. At Harvard, he was a colleague of Stephen Gould, who was my hero, Darwinian evolutionist. But Ernst, look what he says. No educated person any longer questions the validity of the so-called theory of evolution, which we now know to be a simple fact. Do you catch what that said? Guys, that is just sad. First of all, how did it become a simple fact? If there was a simple fact, I wouldn't be here tonight. But the sad part is, look how it's worded. If you don't believe it's a simple fact, then you're what? Yeah, you're one of those uneducated idiot Christians, as I call them. You see what I mean about the peer pressure and how wrong it is? Since many professors, look at this, view their mission as helping poor right-wing Christian children outgrow their parents' faith. We're just trying to open their minds. That's what a college education is all about. Yes, we are Christians, but we have to challenge our incoming students' narrow fundamentalism in order to broaden their perspective and make them well-educated. Do you see what that's doing? That is just wrong. That is sad. But that's what your students are facing. So that's why we need to build that foundation. You know, I don't care what you build the building out of, what kind of space age material you build the building out of. If the foundation is bad, the building will fall on your head. So where is the foundation in God's word? Genesis. It's the very foundation of our existence, of his word. Now, I told you we're talking about two faith-based religions. I didn't just make that up. And by the way, the scientific community agrees with it. In his book, The Evolution-Creation Struggle, Michael Ruse interprets the last 200 years of conflict between biology and religion as a struggle between evolutionism and creationism. Evolutionism is not merely an endorsement of the scientific theory of evolution. It consists of the whole metaphysical, you see that, what they call it, metaphysical creation, metaphysical or ideological picture built around or on evolution. As such, it constitutes a secular religion. Thus, for Roos, a philosopher of science at Florida State University, the debate over creationism and evolution is more a conflict between two religions than between religion and science. That's all I'm telling you. It's two faith-based religions. I had absolute faith in my religion. That's why I pray that God would give me that much faith in His Word. Because that's what it's based. So why don't we stop this nonsense of beating each other, and especially even within the Christian community, we're nitpicking each other. Why don't we just be honest? Let's call them what they are, two faith-based religions, and teach it all. And let you use the brains God has given you to figure it out. You know, it's okay for us to have different opinions. That's legal. But it's not okay for me or any other scientist to inflict our opinion on you or your students as fact. Yet that's what's happening. I had a chance to speak to 600 scientists and science teachers down in Southern California. Guys, that's intimidating. You know. So I thought I'd be clever and I ask a question I knew I'd get a response on. But now I ask it everywhere. So I'm going to ask you, and I want to see your hands. How many of you in this room have some clue, some basic idea how we date fossils? You've heard it, read it, seen it. Somebody, how many of you? Probably 90% or more of you have a clue. Now, when I ask a room full of scientists and science teachers, I expected every hand to go up. And it did. Every hand went up. But what I was not ready for was the answer I got. Any of you brave enough to tell me the number one way? Well, that's what they did down there, but it was like a choir. I don't know how they did it. All at once, they went, carbon 14. Guys, I am not rarely speechless, but I was then because I was stunned. Because carbon 14 cannot date fossils, and it's never been used to date fossils. So why did you tell me that? Because that's what you've heard, what you've been told. Now you see why I said what you're not being told? I'm being a little facetious there because carbon is a dating procedure. But the problem is carbon can only date carbon-based items. Real wood, real bone, real blood, real tissue. Once it fossilizes, once it petrifies, turns to rock, carbon can't date it. But the students don't know this. The teachers don't know it. Here's the other problem. Even if carbon could date the fossil, no scientist in the world, even me as a secular human of science, I never stretched carbon dating past maybe 40,000 years. And even then I knew it was stretching it because if you chart it up to about 6,000 to 8,000 years, it's pretty accurate. Past that, it drops into the abyss. No scientist in the world will stretch carbon dating into the millions. None. Zero. So do you see the problem? How do we get a date of 3.7 million for Australopithecus afarensis? You all know her, right? Lucy? Australopithecus ramidus. How about the Jurassic? 65 million. Do you see what I'm getting at? How do we get million-year dates? Carbon cannot give you million-year dates. But I just had a kid in California last week. I spoke down in desert hot springs. He says, Dr. Oliver, my teacher was showing me where they carbon dated this new fossil at 3 million... It just breaks my heart. That's just wrong. We use radioisotopes to get million-year dates, by the way. You've all heard of uranium. Uranium-238 is the parent product. It decays into a daughter product called lead. Rubidium decays into strontium, potassium into argon. This will be on the test, so I hope you're taking it. Those things will cause your eyes to cross. But radioisotope dating is pretty much worthless. I went into Mount St. Helens and took a sample of the lava dome that we watched form. We know how old it is. It's 12 years old. We watched the lava dome form, crystallize into an igneous rock called dacite. Now, there's the problem. The radioisotope dating method that gives you million-year dates can only date igneous rock. Where are fossils found? Sedimentary rock. You see the problem? You see what I mean about what they're not being told? This might shake your tree a little bit, but there's no way on this planet or any other to date a fossil. Zero. We can only come up with a good guess. We can find the closest igneous rock, measure down, and oh, there's the fossil, so it must be 2.5 million. Do you see what I mean? Is that empirical? No. And besides that, we know it's kind of bad. We took samples of igneous rock called dacite, which was part of the Mount St. Helens lava dome, and we dated it. And we know it's 12 years old, and we got dates all the way up to 2.7 million for 12-year-old rock. How good are the dating procedures? They're terrible. All I want to do and all I'm hoping to do is to show that there is an alternative and that the young people are not given a fair shake. We're asking our young people to make decisions, and they make great decisions that are wrong because they don't have all the information. All I'm asking is let's give them all of the information. And then if where you land is between you and God, not me, but you need to have all the information. And see, here's the problem right here. Darwin was not a scientist, folks. He was a naturalist, and he wasn't even a very good naturalist. But he had a vendetta against God. He was angry at God. He wanted to in fact, we have a letter where he said he wanted to murder God because his daughter died a rather long, drawn out, and it was pretty bad. So he blamed God. You know, how could a loving God? Do you heard that one? I hear it all the time. Well, I got news for you. A loving God didn't do it. It was the people in the garden. You know, it's called the fall, the curse, sin. But Darwin was a racist, folks. Where did racism come from? God didn't create races. He created of one blood. But Darwin, look at the title of his book. I had to go back to 1977 to find a copy that had the whole title on it. It says, Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection and the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Do you know that Hitler had one of the biggest collections of Darwinian memorabilia? After this book was published in 1859, racism really reared its ugly head. You know that they went out and they shot Aborigines and took them to a taxidermist and had them mounted and put in museum displays, like an antelope or something, based on this crackpot. But look at his mindset. When he set out on the Beagle to prove God didn't exist, look what he says. The Old Testament, from its manifestly false history of the earth, was no more to be trusted than the sacred books of the Hindus or the beliefs of any barbarian. The New Testament is a damnable doctrine. I can hardly see how anyone ought to wish Christianity to be true. That was his mindset. You see what I mean? It wasn't scientific. It was done out of a preconceived worldview. The science supports us. The math is absolutely devastating. You know, if it were close, 50... 60, 40, 50, something, that would be good. But it's absolutely mind-numbing. In 1961, the odds of one random act of evolution occurring spontaneous generation was 10 to the 50th power. Do you realize how big a number that is? That's 50 zeros, folks. That was considered impossible. But yet, that was the odds of one random act. But to get the diversity in species, we'd have had to have multiple acts. But in 20 years, from 1960s to the 80s, you know that number changed from 50 zeros to 40,000 zeros. Why? Right here. We can do calculations that Einstein and these people couldn't even imagine. But guess what that number is today, 2018? It's 10 to 10 to the 123rd power. That's a number so big you couldn't write it on a piece of paper the size of the entire visible universe. That's the odds of one random act of evolution. But yet we're to accept that? Yeah, because that's the only choice. See, I did not want to believe in God. I chose not to believe in God in spite of the evidence, not because of it, because my lifestyle was such that I sure did not want to be accountable to God. I didn't want to share the glory with God. So I didn't. See, and that's legal. If you come up to me later and tell me, hey, I don't believe in this. I don't want to believe in God. Hey, that is your business. That is your right. I won't argue with you. But if you tell me you don't believe in God because of all the evidence, now I'll argue with you. Because there isn't any. Zero. See, if we had all this evidence that the secular community says, then why aren't we showing it? And I didn't even get into the astronomy. Wait till you see what's going on in outer space and the astronomy. It's absolutely devastating old Earth. And as I said, we just scratched the surface. We've got to end here. But I just want to pray for you. And guys, I ask that you pray for your pastors. Pray for us, because like I said, it's getting really scary out there.